So today I'm going to speak on, guess what? David and Goliath. The last time that I preached in church, which was, I don't remember if it was 2 or 3 weeks ago, I talked about, because last week none of you showed up, I talked about Logan made it to the end of the driveway. I will give him that. And he took a picture of the church. But I talked about David, King David. And David was anointed king. For those of you who were here and those of you who weren't here, I'll catch you up in 3 minutes. So David was anointed king at about 15 years old. And at 11 o'clock church, it was the only church that I sang at. And do you remember what I sang? Diane remembers. Oh, I just can't wait to be king. Remember that? And what's that from? Lion King, one of my favorite movies. I didn't sing the whole thing, and you didn't miss anything. David is 15 years old. He's told, you're going to be king, young man. But in the meantime, what? Does anybody remember? Go back to be a shepherd. In the meantime, go back to be a shepherd. What's the worst job you can think of? Who would want to be a garbage man? Anybody thinking garbage man? That's a pretty bad job. You want to be a garbage man? No, that's a bad job, right? Yeah, I wanted to be a dog catcher when I was a kid. Did you? Well, you know, you can find some good stuff. Shepherd was the worst job. Okay? It's a bad job. And so David, who's going to be king, but until then, go back out and do this really bad job. And it was a bad job, A, because it was dangerous, B, because you would eventually start talking to the sheep, and C, I don't know why C, it just was a bad job. So, that was the point was about humility last time, and about God has a reason for it. And so I just thought today I would talk a little bit about David and Goliath and David coming out of the field. So he went in back into the field to watch the sheep. Now he's called back out of the field, not to battle Goliath. Does anybody know why he's called out of the field? Because his brothers are in the army of Israel, and they need somebody to take him some food out. And so David's dad calls David out of the field and says, here's a bunch of food, take this to your brothers. And I use that as the way to tell you that that's how I know David went back out into the field to be a shepherd. Because they called him out of the field to take supplies to his brothers. So let's pick up in chapter 17 of 1 Samuel. Now the Philistines gathered their forces for war and assembled at Soko in Judah. They pitched camp at Ephes Damim between Soko and Azekah. Seminary paid off, didn't it? Not that I know how to pronounce any of those, but they taught me to just say them like you know them. Saul and the Israelites assembled and camped in the valley of Elah and drew up their battle line to meet the Philistines. The Philistines occupied one hill, so if we think of a valley much wider than this, but if we think of a valley, and this is one side on one hill, and then you've got a wide valley, and then this is the other side up another hill, you all are encamped on one hill, and you're one side, the Philistines or the Israelites, because y'all want to be the Israelites, right? Nobody wants to be the Philistines. And then you all are over on this other hill. with the valley between them. Sophie was really getting into that. I got to get her back on the... A champion... Sophie, you must be Goliath. I don't know. You're not on either hill. A champion named Goliath, who was from Gath, came out of the Philistine camp. He was over 9 feet tall. He had a bronze helmet on his head and wore a coat of scale armor of bronze, weighing 5,000 shekels. On his legs, he wore bronze shin guards, and a bronze javelin was slung on his back. His spear shaft was like a weaver's rod, and its iron point weighed 600 shekels. His shield bearer went ahead of him. Goliath stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, "Why do you come out and line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine, and are you not the servants of Saul? Choose a man and have him come down to me. If he is able to fight and kill me, he will become your subject. We will become your subjects. But if I overcome him and kill him, you will become our subjects and serve us." Then the Philistine said, "This day I defy the ranks of Israel. Give me a man and let us fight each other." On hearing the Philistines, this is where I'm going to end right now, Sophie. On hearing the Philistines' words, Saul and all the Israelites were dismayed and terrified. So you have two groups, opposing groups, one on this hill, one on this hill, and they're facing each other, and this goes on for weeks. Weeks. Neither side is foolish enough to try to take over the other side. Because taking over the other side would mean what? Someone help me out. Going down in the your hill, across the valley, and start up the other hill to go after the other side. And that's foolish. Because what do you want to always occupy if you are an army? You want to occupy the high point. And so this is a standoff. It's a stalemate. Neither side is foolish enough to come at the other side. And so what would often happen at times like this is that there's this term. It was a commonly used battle method called single combat. Listen, this is a David and Goliath sermon, but you guys are not, you're going to leave here looking at this totally different than what you did, than what you thought you knew. Single combat. So you can already see where this is going, right? So to end this thing, one side sends one person to battle on behalf of them, and the other side sends one person to battle on behalf of them. And so the one side, they send down their best warrior, and his name happens to be Goliath. He happens to be a giant. He happens to have armor that weighs 125 pounds. You saw how many shekels that was? It's 125 pounds of armor. The tip of his spear weighed 15 pounds. I know, you're going 15 pounds, and I always think, okay, 3 5-pound bags of sugar, but that doesn't work anymore because now they're 4-pound bags. Almost 4 4-pound bags of sugar. That was just the tip of his spear. This was a big man. And when they send him, and he starts yelling, "Okay, Israelites, you send your guy down," what are they doing? Right? What did it say they're doing? Trembling. Even the king. It said Saul and all of them. They're trembling. Well, as God often does, he did something unexpected. David's dad, Jesse, calls David and out of the field watching the sheep. David leaves the sheep with someone else, and Jesse says to David, take this food out to your brothers, these brave soldiers who are out there on the front line fighting. They're not out there fighting, are they? What are they doing? Shaking in their boots. They're shaking in their boots. And he says, you go out and you take them this food. And so David leaves his sheep with someone else, and he gets to go out and run an errand. It's just, think about how happy you would be. Who was snowed in for more than 2 days? Okay. Mary Maine, you were snowed in more than 2 days. And think about how happy you are to get out. Imagine how happy David had to be to get out of that field. And so his dad sends this food with him. He goes to deliver this food. And when he goes to deliver this food, he hears a lot of the soldiers talking. And they're saying, who's going to go fight? Who's going to go fight Goliath? And David says, hey, you need somebody to fight Goliath? What's in it for me? And they tell him what's in it for the person who defeats. He said, what's in it for me when I go down there? And what's in it for the man who goes down and kills the giant? And so he says, I'm your guy. And so Saul calls for David. David goes to meet with King Saul. And King Saul says, and David says, hey, King, here I am. I'm your guy. And the king says, you're not my guy. And David said, oh, yeah, I'm your guy. He said, I go out in the field and I kill bear and I kill lions. He said, a lion or a bear will get one of my sheep in their mouths and I will have to go out and slay them. I'm your guy. And King Saul says, well, the Lord be with you. Here, put on my armor. And David puts on the armor. And David says, this was not made for me. This does not fit me. This isn't right for me. Gosh, it just occurred to me. Some preachers wear robes all the time. That's not for me. I'd be a phony up here in a robe. Huh. And so David said, this isn't for me. And so he takes the armor off and he says, I'm good to go right now. And Saul says, Lord be with you. And David said, and also with you. No, he didn't say that. What's David do? He picks up 5 stones. He puts them in his pouch and he heads down to face the giant. Now, who's the underdog? Tell me. Who says David's the underdog? Who says Goliath's the underdog? Yeah, some of you are just rebels. Common sense would tell you to bet on the 9-foot guy who's got 125 pounds of bronze on with a 15-pound end of a spear, who's battle-tested. When we were in Haiti the first time, I remember Elimaj was doing this story at an orphanage of David and Goliath. And he's telling the story, and he picks the biggest kid in the orphanage, who was almost as tall as me, and he picks the smallest kid in the orphanage, who was like Selena, and he pulls those two up and he says in Haitian Creole, if these two were going to fight, which one would win? Well, there's not a kid in the orphanage who said the little kid. The kids in the orphanage, they know who's going to win because they battle the big kids all the time and they never win. We've heard this story a million times. We talk about it, David versus Goliath, and we use it in military, we use it in sports, we use it in business world, don't we? It's a David versus Goliath. And you never know, sometimes David wins. Well, let me tell you the rest of the story. Who thinks that David has a slingshot? Okay, so we're thinking, who among you has ever owned a slingshot? Aren't those cool? Well, I hate to burst your bubble, but David didn't have a slingshot. He had a sling. Who's ever had a sling on their arm? I have. I had a broken arm when I was young, had a sling on it. You've had shoulder surgery, you've had a sling on it. A sling, it was a rope, and it would have a pouch in the rope, and the people would hold the two ends of the rope together. It's almost like the purses that you guys made for Haiti or for Operation Christmas Child. So you take these two pieces of rope, you put the rock or the projectile in the little pouch, and you start spinning it. The best slingers could spin that thing 6 times per second. One Mississippi, and that thing has gone. And then when they're ready to shoot it, they let go of one of the ropes. That thing's going so fast that that rope in the pouch flips open, and that projectile goes. The best slingers, they said, could shoot a stone 200 yards. It would leave the pouch at 35 meters per second. 35 meters, think yards, 35 yards per second. How long would it take to go a football field? 3 seconds. In 3 seconds, a football field. 1, 2, 3. They've got mosaic tiles from thousands of years ago that show slingers hitting birds out of the air. Did anybody watch the hockey games last night? What do they call it? All-Star Skills Competition. Did anybody watch the Hockey All-Star Skills Competition last night? Okay, two of you. They had this one part where they had a net, and they had a plate in each corner of the net. And someone would pass them a puck, and they would hit the puck, and they would see how many shots it took and how quick they could hit all four plates in the four corners. And one of the players said, it was really strange not having a moving target there that you had to try to avoid. These slingers can hit a bird out of the air. So Goliath is down there saying, come at me. Come here. I'm going to feed your flesh to the birds and the beasts of the field. David knows not to get too close, doesn't he? If he gets too close, he doesn't have a chance. David's been prepared for this. Why did David have to go back out in the field to watch the sheep? To be prepared for this. Final thing about the speed of that stone as it leaves, they said that it would be equivalent to a 45 caliber handgun. Does that make sense? Did I say that right, Jay? 45 millimeter caliber, 45 caliber handgun. They said that that projectile would come out at such a speed that it would be equivalent to a 45 caliber handgun. Now you tell me who didn't have a chance. You see, there were three different types of military, three different services that you could perform in the military. One was you could be in the cavalry. In the cavalry, you guys know what the cavalry is, right? You're on horses, you're on carriages, you're on chariots, you're on wheels, an animal pulling you. Well, then there's the infantry. You know what the infantry is, right? You're on foot. Boots on the ground. You're the infantry. And then there were the slingers and the archers. You know what an archer is, right? And you know what the slinger is. Now, if David had come down with a bow and an arrow, they probably would have known something was up. But he came down with a sling and some stones. Saul, how did Saul think that David was going to go defeat Goliath? He didn't think he was going to defeat him. He thought he was sending a lamb to the slaughter. But how did Goliath, what was he expecting? Someone else to fight him just like he was going to fight them. He's not expecting this. Tell me who didn't have a chance. Who was the underdog? Knowing what you know now, it would have been a miracle if Goliath had won, wouldn't it? And here's something. I don't need to really go there. If you're in a hurry, you can leave. Who knows what acromegaly is? Anybody? The chiropractor knows. Acromegaly. Who's heard of Andre the Giant? Jake, you haven't heard of Andre the Giant? Okay. You've heard of Andre the Giant? He was a wrestler. He was a big wrestler. He had acromegaly. Acromegaly is a tumor associated with the pituitary gland so that it gives you giant features. So your hands are so large compared to someone else's hands. Your jaw grows so big. You can grow so tall. Andre the Giant had acromegaly. They think perhaps Abraham Lincoln did. Acromegaly, your jaw grows so big that there's usually a pretty big space in between all your teeth because you're not born with any more teeth than anybody else, but your jaws and your face is just so much bigger. In the 1960s, there was this doctor who put forth the idea that perhaps, I almost said Andre the Giant, Goliath, perhaps, had acromegaly. Now, I'm not telling you this as fact. I like to give you stuff to think about. And if that was the case, it often distorts your vision too. And so when Goliath's being led down by the shield bearer, that would explain that, wouldn't it? When Goliath saying, "Come to me," that would explain that. And when Goliath said, "What am I, a dog, that you're coming at me with sticks?" He perhaps saw David's staff and saw more than one. Just something for you to think about. And I wrap this all up just to tell you that sometimes we look at ourselves as the underdog, don't we? So what's the moral of the story now that you... I hope that you leave here, I hope every one of you leaves here thinking, when you hear David and Goliath from now on, you know who the underdog was, and it wasn't the guy with the sling. It was the guy doing stuff... It was the guy who had the old equipment. So what lessons do you take from this? What encouragement do you take from this? Anything's possible with God. Work smarter. Things aren't always what they seem. Do y'all believe that? Things aren't always what they seem. That's a good one. What else? Focus on God and not your giants. Use what you're familiar with. Don't question the preparation time. You know what? Somebody this morning said it was like bringing a knife to a gunfight. Yeah. For me personally, you know what it does? It encourages me that whatever I face, that A, God has prepared me for it, and B, God has a purpose for it. And it's not that God, I don't know how to explain it. I don't think that God causes everything. I don't think God causes you to get cancer, but I think that He knows you're going to get it, and I think He has prepared you for it. I think that whatever it is, He's prepared you for it. For 5 or 6 years, Diane and I ran the Sunday school program at Sistersville First United Methodist Church, and He was preparing me to be a pastor, and He sent me to Mason for 6 years, and He had prepared me for there. And He used that time there to prepare me for here. And He's using the time here to prepare me for something else. And so, for me, it makes it easier if someone comes in my office to yell at me about something, to talk to me about something. It makes it easier for me to think, God's trying to teach me something here. Do you see what I'm saying? That God has a purpose for this, and I can't see it yet, but someday I'm going to know what it was. The trials that we face, the challenges that we face, the difficulties that look insurmountable, God's at work. The disciples thought that the giant had won when Christ died on the cross. And 3 days later, they found out that the giant didn't win. But God had won. God always wins. Somebody posted this morning on Facebook one thing I said, I shared about Abraham Lincoln. I mentioned Lincoln. And they asked him during the Civil War, they said, how do you know that you're on God's side? Or how do they know, I messed that up, how do you know that God's on your side? In this battle between the North and the South, how do you know God's on your side? And Lincoln said, I hope I'm on God's side. If you are a Christian, God is on your side and you're on God's side. And if you are not, Scripture says you're an enemy of God. Today, I want to give you a chance to become a friend of God. Would you bow with me to pray? God, we thank you for this reminder that things aren't always what they seem. Things are hardly ever what they seem. And having you with us, we're not the underdog in any situation. We're not the underdog in any circumstance. people can look around and look at one of your children and think of how sad it is and how defeated they are. But God, I'm thinking right now of Eileen in the hospital. And when you had one of the nurses come in and say, I've never seen anybody as happy and smiling like you who has a tube down their nose. Because she knows that she is an overcomer. And she knows that you're going to be glorified in her presence in the hospital. Sam and Linda know that you're going to be glorified in whatever happens at their house, and the ways that, Linda, the challenges that Sam faces, and the way that Linda cares for him, that you're going to be glorified in that. And they're going to be victorious. And such is the case with each person here who faces their giants. So I give you thanks for this encouragement today, that we are with you, never the underdog. And for those who don't have Christ with them, they can't win, Lord. And so any here today who aren't convinced that they have Christ on their side, and Christ is on their side, and Christ died for them, Lord, I pray that you've been speaking a salvation message to them this whole time. And I pray that they know now that you are the winning side, and that you, through the shed blood of Jesus Christ, offer every person on earth, no matter what we've done, you offer us the opportunity to be forgiven of that and come to the winning side. And so that's what I pray for people today who, Lord, aren't yours, that they would know that no matter what they do, they can't win. And with you, no matter what, we can't lose. And I pray that you would hear their cry for forgiveness today, and that you would help them to know that you're faithful and just to forgive their sins if they but ask. Thanks to Christ. In his name we pray. Amen.